Okay, are we ready to do the last section for today? We just have a little bit shorter time. I'm going to finish right at 3 o'clock like promised. Won't go over. So let's just finish out this time and then we'll cover as much as we can. And we're doing well. We're on track. We're on target for what we plan to do. We've got Daniel chapter 7, and I'm actually going to cover Daniel chapter 7 and Daniel chapter 8 as we talk about this next section. So we'll see those things together. Let me just give you, let's do an overview. Some part, the second part of Daniel chapter 7, I will save for tomorrow because I've got some reasons for that. What I'm going to do right now is focus on the prophecy section of Daniel chapter 7. It's just like I showed you here before. What we've done now is we have reached the middle of the book. And you see right here where I have written historical versus prophetic. Okay, that right there. Those two sides, historical versus prophetic, are to say chapters 1 through 6, say it this way, that's stories. Chapters 1 through 6 is stories. Chapters 7 through 12 is prophecy. So when we cross from chapter 6 to chapter 7, we've kind of gone to volume 2. We've gone to the second section. And now we've gone from stuff that God did in the past, chapters 1 to 6, to stuff that God will do in the future, chapters 7 to 12. Let's look at the beginning of chapter 7, get an idea of what I'm talking about when I say this prophecy. So here, this will show you how different this section feels. Here we go. Daniel chapter 7. In the first year of Belshazzar, king of Babylon. Pause. You remember that guy? That's chapter 5. You see what I'm saying? It's going backwards. It's everything before now has been this, then that, then that, then that, historical order. When I get to chapter 5, go backwards a little bit back to, or chapter 7, go backwards a little bit to the king in chapter 5. In the first year of Belshazzar, king of Babylon, Daniel saw a dream, had visions. Daniel recounted and said, I saw my vision in the night. Behold, four winds of the heavens were stirring up the great sea. Probably the sea and the four winds of the heavens. It's the picture of like the four points of the compass. You might say something like that. Four points of the compass from every direction. So it's setting a stage for you. We're talking about the world. We're talking about the whole globe. Four great beasts came up from the sea, different one from the other. The first was like a lion, had wings like an eagle. I looked, its wings were plucked off, it was lifted up from the ground, it was made to stand upon 2 feet like a man, the heart of a man was given to it. What? What is this? Behold, another beast, a second one, similar to a bear, raised up on one side. It had three ribs in its mouth between its teeth. It was told to it, arise, devour much flesh. Wow, what happened? After this, I saw another, like a leopard, had four wings of a bird on its back, and it had four beasts, and dominion was given to it. These stories were a lot easier to read, weren't they? And after this time, I saw in the night visions, behold, a fourth beast, fearsome and terrible, exceedingly strong. It had great iron teeth. It devoured and pulverized the remnant, what was left over. It trampled with its feet. It was different than all the beasts before it. It had 10 horns. I contemplated the horns, and behold, another horn, a little one, came up among them. Three from the horns were uprooted. Behold, eyes like the eyes of a man were in this horn. It had a mouth speaking great things. Wow, how do you interpret this? Well, there are some keys that kind of help you get started anyway. Okay, so what I'm seeing here in this section is from Daniel chapter 7. And I've got four parts, four different things, four different beasts. 1, 2, 3, 4. First one, we just right there in verse 4. Second one in verse 5. Third one in verse 6. Fourth one in verse 7. So I have four beasts. And that's kind of interesting because if I think back a little bit, I remember one time back in Daniel chapter 3 where I had four things as well. Right? There was another vision that had four parts to it. And that vision back in Daniel chapter 3, I had the head of gold, I had the chest of silver, I had the middle, and I had the thighs of bronze, the feet and of iron and clay. Right? So that was Daniel chapter 3, that vision. What I've got on the screen so far, that should be very clear, right? Because that just came from the Bible. All I did is just put down what is in Daniel chapter 3. You know, that says Daniel chapter 3. Let's change this. That's incorrect. Daniel chapter 2. All right, done. So, Daniel chapter 2. Sorry. That's all straight out of Daniel chapter 2. Now, over on here on the other side where it says meaning, on this side, what about that? I know actually one of these so far. I remember this as a student. I took a Daniel Revelation class, and the teacher told me these four beasts, this is Babylon, Medes, Persia, Greece, and then Rome. I mean, probably you've heard that at some point. And I thought, well, that's not sort of random. You know, I mean, I don't know. Maybe it could be like the Austro-Hungarian Empire, followed by Spain, followed by the UK, followed by the United States. Why not? That's what I thought at the time. Why did he just pick those four? How does he get to decide? So let me show you why. The head of gold back there in Daniel chapter 2, God said very clearly, that was Nebuchadnezzar. You are the head of gold. Right? And as I've said elsewhere, Nebuchadnezzar, in the whole span of Babylon, if I remember right, I think he was the king for the whole kingdom of the Neo-Babylonian Empire is what it's called. For the entire empire, he was king like almost 50% of it. I mean, he was basically the Babylonian Empire. After he dies, you have different kings. This guy reigns for 3 years. This guy reigns for 6 years. This guy reigns for 2 years. This guy reigns for 3 months. Nebuchadnezzar reigned for like 50 years. I mean, he was the Babylonian Empire. So that explains that much. And I would say, fair enough, I feel pretty reasonably good about arguing that the head of gold is Babylon. All right? Now, when you go to Daniel chapter 7, here's what gets interesting about that. What I just read in Daniel chapter 7, I have four things that sort of lines up. And even more interesting, let's notice the first one. The first was like a lion. You can go to certain places, this is note 9, you can go to certain places in Scripture and you can see where a lion is tied to Babylon. More significantly, maybe, I don't know. You can go to museums today. I've been to museums that have big pieces from Babylon that they brought, I mean stone, okay? And they have these huge lions that was like the symbol that was used in the era. Lions have been used a lot. But anyway, that's one of the symbols that Babylonians like to use to represent themselves, okay? So, makes a lot of sense. Not just that. Look at it. It had wings. Oh, by the way, I should say lions that have wings. These like double-winged lions, and they'd have them in front of their palace and stuff. As I looked, its wings were plucked off. It was lifted up from the ground and made to stand upon 2 feet like a man, and the heart of a man was given to it. Can you think of a story anywhere in the book of Daniel where somebody acted like an animal, and then finally they got exalted and made to stand up and actually act like a person? See, I think part of what's going on, I should have brought this out earlier, but I think part of what's going on back in Daniel chapter 4, when God humbles Nebuchadnezzar and makes him act like an animal, we think, okay, God humbled him. Well, yes, I think what God is telling you is, Nebuchadnezzar, this is the way you've been acting all along. You've been like this all along. Let me just show you your true nature. Let me just show you your true colors. This is what it's like to be arrogant. This is what it's like to stand up on the rooftop and say, is this not Babylon the Great that I have made by the strength of my own power? That's about as intelligent as that dumb donkey out there eating grass in the field. Let me show you what you are really like. Right? And I think part of what's going on here in Daniel chapter 7 is to show you that. Okay, God actually exalted Nebuchadnezzar. What does that mean? Nebuchadnezzar humbled himself, finally. And God gave him the heart of a man, some understanding. So now I feel really good about this. I feel really good about making this link, the head of gold, the lion with eagle's wings. There's a lot of pretty good ties to Babylon. And it's not just like, I think so, but you know, someone else could say it was the Austro-Hungarian Empire or something. No, there's biblical information. Because the Bible said you are the head of gold, and there's links between that and here, this first beast that's in the list. Okay. Well, what about the rest of these? Because we've got all these other beasts that are here, and I kind of want to understand what they are. Let's look at chapter 8. And if I go forward to chapter 8, here's another vision that might also be a little confusing to us. Daniel has another vision in chapter 8. I saw, and I beheld a ram standing before the canal. It had two horns. The horns were high, but one was higher than the second, and the higher one came up last. I saw the ram charging toward the west and toward the north and toward the south. No beast stood before him. There was no one delivering from his power. He did according to all that he wanted, according to his desire, and became great. Okay, just notice the details. Here's a ram. two horns. One horn is high, but the other is higher than the second. The higher one came up last. I think there's some ties, legitimate, reasonable ties. If you go back to chapter 7, verse 5, this second beast, like a bear, you see where it's raised up on one side? When it says raised up on one side, it's kind of like this. It's like an animal that's basically walking like this. One side's higher than the other. Okay? And if you know a little bit about the history, the second kingdom that was after Babylon, the one that conquered Babylon, the Medes and the Persians, the way that they were initially, the Medes were really powerful. And it was like the Persians, okay, we'll come along and we'll help you out. But the Medes were really the more powerful one. So the Persians were along for the ride. After a while, though, the Persians become the more important, and the Medes are just along for the ride. The Persians really came to dominate. And Cyrus himself, Persian background, actually background from both. So you have this lopsided empire where one side of the empire is stronger than the other, even though they're kind of partners together. Okay, and you see that here in Daniel chapter 7, where you see, like a bear, raised up on one side, rise, devour much flesh. And you see a similar thing going on in chapter 8, where you see the ram charging, and there are two horns, and one is high, higher than the second, and the higher one came up last. That's why I say the Persians eventually became stronger than the Medes. Okay, so you kind of have some details in there that seem to agree with some of that. Let's keep on going in chapter 8. After that, the conqueror of this ram is a male goat. He's coming and he's attacking upon the face of the whole earth. He's running towards this ram. Verse 7, he struck bitterly towards him. He broke his two horns. The ram had no power. He was trampled on the ground. So the male goat conquered the ram, became exceedingly great. When he became great, the great horn was broken. Four conspicuous ones came up instead of it toward the four winds of heaven. Okay, so there's one big king. When he's broken, there's four little kings that come out of him. Just notice this is interesting. Now go back to chapter 7, and I see the leopard, verse 6. Just like the goat was fast, he's a leopard, four wings on its back, four heads. So after it's broken, four horns come up, the beast dominion was given to it. So I think you can see, if you work between the two, chapter 7, the second animal, chapter 8, the ram. Chapter 7, the third animal. Chapter 8, the goat. There's some similarities between them. And where I'm going with that now is let's go to chapter 8. And I want to know who these different pieces are. What are they? Well, chapter 8 gives me an inspired interpretation, verse 20. Chapter 8 tells me, concerning the ram which you saw with the two horns, these are the kings of Media and Persia. So I don't even have to try to convince you that the ram is the kings of Media and Persia, because God told us so, right? God told us the ram is the kings of Media and Persia. Okay, that should be the end of the discussion. And if you keep on going, the shaggy male goat, verse 21, is the king of Greece. The great horn, which is between his eyes, it's the first king. We know historically that's Alexander the Great. But he tells, it's not like my opinion or my interpretation or something like that. He tells you it's Greece. God just says it. It's right there in the passage. So I could definitely say for sure, when I get to chapter 8 and I have the ram and the goat, there's no question from the Bible, from the text, that is Media, Persia, and Greece. That's not an interpretation thing or my viewpoint. That's just right out of the Bible here. What's interesting, verse 22, Alexander the Great, he established Greece, but when he died, guess what happened? His kingdom was split into four parts. Okay? And you have that right here in verse 22, chapter 8, verse 22, it was split into four parts, and you have that back there in chapter 7, verse 6, that it was split into four parts. Okay, so those things add up. So, when I put these things together, I think everything on the screen I feel pretty confident about. It's not just my viewpoint. Not just like, I think this, and so there you go. I feel pretty good about this, because where did I get... Well, here, let me give myself a pointer. Where did I get this one? I got that one from chapter 2. God said, you are the head of gold. Where did I get these guys? I got these guys from the interpretation in chapter 8. God said, this is Persia, this is Greece. So when I put those pieces together, these pieces are lining up. I have an inspired interpretation, all three of those pieces. Okay, any question about what's up on the screen? Good question. There's a note here, and note 13 down at the bottom. This is one of those things that's like a, I would say this is an interpretation. So somebody could have a different view. But probably, I think what most people would say, that there were three major battles in the history of the Medes and the Persians. And so one was Babylon, 539. The second was Lydia, 546. The third was Egypt, 525. And so most historians would say those three battles were like the big events in the life of the Medes and the Persians. Those were the three big countries they conquered. It was like one, two, three, the big events that defined them and made them who they were. So that's probably the best way to go with it. Good question. Let's see if there's any other details that I skipped like that. When you say about the leopard and had four wings of a bird, that probably has the idea of just really fast. Because Greece was established basically within the lifetime of Alexander. I mean, it was like no time at all he had established. It's kind of like the early days of World War II when Hitler is just rolling through Egypt and nobody can stop him. And Blitzkrieg, it's like the lightning war. So that's kind of the way that this feels with Alexander the Great. Just so fast. Just lifetime of one guy before he's even 30. You know, 10, 15 years, he's conquered the whole ancient world. Isn't crazy? So, yeah, that's probably what's going on with that speed thing. Any other questions? Or anything on the screen or anything here so far? Okay, if you thought this, it was a good thought. What about the last part? That last one is the one that's kind of the... Because all these other pieces, I was able to pretty well, I feel pretty good that all these were demonstrated from the text itself, right? And another piece of evidence that I haven't mentioned, just the fact that these are one after the other fits exactly what you've got. I mean, that's one after another, that fits the history, that's what happened. It makes a lot of sense. So what about this last one, Rome? That's traditionally what we identify. And if you go back to the text in chapter 7, it's of course where we're focused. You look at chapter 7, I saw in the night these visions, behold, a fourth beast, fearsome and terrible, exceedingly strong, and it had great iron teeth. It devoured, pulverized, it trampled. And verse 7, important at the end, it was different than all the beasts before it. It was different than all the beasts before it. So something standing out to Daniel about that fourth beast. In fact, if you keep on going, he will ask the verse 15, he will ask the angel about all of this, right? And he wants to know what's going on, but particularly verse 11, he's wondering about the final beast. Especially that last beast stands out. The other beasts, verse 12, their dominion had been taken away, but this beast was different. And Daniel is especially interested, verse 19, I desired to know the exact meaning about the fourth beast, which was different than the rest, exceeding terrifying, its teeth of iron, claws of bronze, eating, shattering, trampling of its feet, what was left. So I think the passage is trying to tell you, these three beasts, or these three kingdoms, they're kind of like a group. But this last, the green one, this last kingdom stands out. It's different than all the rest. Tells you twice. Different than all the rest. Different than all the rest. Then Daniel especially asked, what about the fourth? It's not really, he's not asking the second or the third. He's asking about the fourth. Because something about that really stood out to him. That fourth beast was very different. Okay, so why? We'll traditionally say Rome or the final kingdom. I would want to personally put the emphasis on the final kingdom side of that. So I don't mind if you want to say Rome, especially because, let's say in chapter 9, Rome is kind of the kingdom that kills the Messiah, right? It's under Pilate's rule that it happens. So there's something about Rome particularly because they killed the Messiah. But I think what's going on here, really, it's pointing you to the final kingdom. And by that, what we mean is the Antichrist. We're talking about a future thing. This fourth kingdom is completely different than the others. So these three, Babylon, the Greeks, Babylon, Media, Persia, the Greeks, one after another, they're replacing each other. One comes after another, comes after another. It's the final kingdom that really stands out. The fourth kingdom is different than all the rest. And I would suggest then that some of the details with the fourth, I look at this and I'm kind of scratching my head a little bit. Okay, so there's a horn, then three from the horn were up, what? The three were uprooted, and then this one horn speaking great things. I'm kind of scratching my head about all of that. The ten horns, what is this? Well, I don't have any history yet on that. In other words, I can't go into history and say, here's the event. There were these ten kings, and then these three kings got replaced, and then this one king became. I can't do that, and I can't show you that from history. You know why? It hasn't happened yet. If I lived in the future, I could show you from history. But it hasn't. It's still future. So I can show you from history about Babylon. And I can say in front of their palaces, they had the lions. I can show you from history about the Medes and the Persians. They had three battles. I can show you from history, Greece, Alexander the Great. Then it was broken into four. I can show you all that. When I get to the four beasts, it hasn't happened yet. It's still future. And that's what makes the fourth beast harder to interpret. Because we haven't seen it yet. Any questions there? Pause for a second. There's more to say, but pause there for a second. Yes, sir.
Good.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And there's some thoughts here that we will continue with tomorrow morning in chapter 9, where there's this kind of idea that there's a continuation from Rome and what happened under Pilate, the crucifixion of Christ, the persecution of the early church. There's a continuation from that stretches all the way into the Antichrist final kingdom. This is just interesting to think about a little bit, but to think about how much the kingdoms of this world are intertwined. If you pull out a quarter, if you have a quarter and you look at it, the way that our quarters are designed, there is a lot in common with ancient Roman coinage. And I'm not just saying it so, you know, like the United States particularly. If you pull out a peso from the Philippines, same kind of thing. There's a lot about that design, face on one side of it. There's kind of these rough edges around the side, opposite side wording that curves around. Some of this is going back to ancient things, okay? If you look at, I'll do the Philippines. There is a building in our city, it's a government building, and it is basically neoclassical architecture that is in many ways stretching back to ancient Roman architecture. It's just kind of weird. Like our societies are all intertwined like this, from the ancient all the way into the present. So there's a point to be made that there's this broad influence that stretches all the way from there. I want to do something more like this, though, that in the biblical story, after the death of Christ and Pentecost, basically, God says, I'm giving a long length of time, opportunity for people to spread the gospel. Like, everything goes on pause. Progressive events, the Messiah comes, the Messiah is killed, the Messiah is raised again. Pentecost, the Holy Spirit comes. Pause. Go reach the world. Tell the world about it. There's coming a day when God presses the pause button again and the events start up again. So, in that sense, then, yes, sir, I would do something like that. There's something about Rome, the killing of the Messiah, that links in somehow with the final coming kingdom. Okay, if you have another thought, just let me know, and we'll go down that track. I'm happy to talk through some of those things. Here's one of the things that I want to highlight just to finish out the time here today. If we had more time, we could do more with details. I need to do two things. First of all, in chapter 8, let me just explain something that might be a confusion if you're getting into the reading. You will see verse 24 in chapter 8. This talk about a king with a hard face, understanding riddles. His strength will be great, but not by his own power, and so forth. Okay, and he will even rise up and strike out against the prince of princes and will be broken except by no human hand. Some of the things that are going on in this discussion are probably a reference to a historic figure, Antiochus Epiphanes, who lived in the Greek Empire, or after the Greek Empire. And we'll talk about him a lot more in chapter 11. Okay, so I'll just say this for now, just because of time and limitations. As you're reading through that section, those verses are probably already fulfilled. Different reasons for that, and the notes below will talk about it some. For instance, I'll just say this. You see note 41. It says that he will become great in his own mind. He will be blasphemous. Well, Antiochus Epiphanes inscribed coins that said, Theos Epiphanes, and that means God manifest. Coins that say God manifest on them with his face. He presented himself as God, basically. And Antiochus Epiphanes, this king that lived, if I remember right, 163, around that time, in that the second century before Christ, that he was the one that fulfills many of these prophecies. Okay, so as you're reading through chapter 8, that's kind of what's going on in that section. It's a historical figure. If you're interested, the notes will talk about that some below. And then the last thing I want to say from this is going backwards to chapter 7 is just this, and we'll build on this next time. When I read about these beasts, my temptation as a human is to read through the beasts and go, wow, tell me about the symbolism of that. Right? Well, I'm interested in it. We all are. So my tendency is to focus on the first part of the chapter, all the beasts. What is that beast? What is that beast? What is that beast? What does it tell me about the future? And what do I know about prophecy based off of all of this? And I don't think that's the focus of the chapter at all. We'll talk about this next time. Or tomorrow in our Sunday morning service. The focus of the passage is to say this. Do you see all the kingdoms of the earth? Do you see Babylon and Greece and Medes and Persians and Rome? Do you see all the kingdoms of the earth? All their accomplishments, all their power, all their wisdom, all their science and their technology. These are the great kingdoms of the world. They did incredible stuff. There was a Babylonian astronomer that was able to figure out the length of the solar year just by putting a stick in the ground, measuring some angles and stuff like that. He figured out the length of the solar year and he was only 24 minutes off. That's how close he got. With no modern scientific clocks, no satellites up in the sky, figured all this out. I mean, these people were insanely smart. And in spite of all their inventions and their wisdom and their technology and what they could figure out how to do, what did they really look like from God's viewpoint? A bunch of animals in a cage fighting to the death. I mean, try it, you know? If you want to put in one cage a lion, a bear, a leopard, and a monster, put them in one cage, lock the door, sit back, and just see how this goes. That's what it looks like when all the kingdoms of the earth interact. When I think of, let's put this in our day, when I think of all the group getting together for this NATO forum right now, you know, they're all dressed up in their suits and their ties, and okay, they're very intelligent people, and they meet together and they sit down. But fundamentally what's going on there is that every head of every state wants what's best for his people. And he wants what's best for his people because his people wants what's best for them. And nobody really cares about anybody else. And what we really have in a group of a bunch of intelligent, nice-looking guys dressed up in suits, it's just a bunch of people scrapping with each other to get the most out of the equation that they can. Everybody wants the most for themselves. This is the way the world works. And from God's standpoint, you've got a bunch of animals doing animal things, and it's a big, bloody, yucky mess. This is humanity. And the contrast between that and what comes next is what should blow us away. Because you see the shocking grossness of all of that, devouring, pulverizing, trampling, and then this monster and this little horn speaking blasphemous things. Look at the contrast now, verse 8. I looked, thrones were placed, the Ancient of Days sat down. He's in charge. He's the king. He rules. All around him, his throne is flame of fire, his wheels are burning fire, a river of fire is coming before him. Thousands attended him, 10,000 times 10,000 stood before him. The court in judgment sat down, and the books were opened. So I think what Daniel is presenting to us more than anything is that God is very much on his throne. The kingdoms of this earth fighting, struggling, destroying one another, trampling, biting, killing. God sitting on his throne. He's in charge. He rules the world. And that ought to give us confidence as we live in a world that's messed up. Really messed up world. God sits upon his throne. When we get into some of this tomorrow, Daniel chapter 7 is beautiful. It's powerful stuff. And we'll start talking tomorrow in the Sunday morning service. We'll talk about the vision that comes after that. If you can take the time to read through it, you'll love it. Verse 13, talking about one like a son of man presented before him. Son of man, what you should understand, a human. You had a bunch of beasts, a bunch of animals. Here comes finally a human. And that human stands before the Ancient of Days. And to him was given dominion and honor and a kingdom that all peoples, nations, and languages should serve him. His dominion is everlasting. His kingdom will not be destroyed. Echoing Nebuchadnezzar's words in chapter 4. So the question I would ask you for tomorrow as you think ahead, what human deserves to be given all dominion and honor in a kingdom that all peoples, nations, and languages should serve him forever and ever, that his kingdom would have no end? What human is that? Who would that be? One like a son of man? Does that sound familiar, son of man? Can you find other places where that son of man expression comes up? What human deserves to receive all authority and power over all things? And we'll talk about that more tomorrow. Let's take just 1 or 2 minutes here and let's write down some ideas that we got from Daniel chapter 7 and 8. And then specific responses we would make to that. The way my mind tends to run in that is these ideas we just talked about. The kingdoms of the earth, what are they? A bunch of beasts fighting it out in a cage. Well, how does that affect the way I view my place in a world of politics, in a world of diplomacy, in a world where I love my country, but what is my country really, right? So in that world, how should I respond, or how should I view life? How should I view day-to-day events coming out in the newspapers in respect to what I just discovered about countries in Daniel chapter 7? Okay, as you're finishing that up, tomorrow we will, in the Sunday school time, we'll go to Daniel chapter 9. This is one of those passages that is, this is in some ways very hard to understand, where it's talking about the 77s. 490 years. And so we're going to talk about that at some pretty good length in our Sunday school time tomorrow. In the Sunday morning service, my plan is for us to walk through really the whole book with a special focus on chapter 7 and talk about Jesus Christ in the book of Daniel. So we're going to follow the theme of Jesus Christ through the entire book. What you're going to see is it's all over this book. We don't pay enough attention to it. We probably don't see it. But Jesus Christ fills this book. It's appearing all through here. So that's our focus in the Sunday morning service. And Sunday night we'll cover chapters 10 to 12. And that'll finish out the book. So we're on schedule. Look forward to having that time with you tomorrow if you're able to come. Thank you so much for your time today.